Well, we are continuing a study through Hebrews chapter 11, which is considered by many to be the definitive scripture passage on faith. Last time, we looked at the life of Jacob, who is referred to in Hebrews 11, verse 21. And today, we're going to look at the life of Jacob's son, Joseph, who is the subject of the next verse, Hebrews 11, verse 22. It says, by faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. This verse is referring to the last event recorded in the book of Genesis from Joseph's life. But rather than jumping directly to the end of Joseph's life, I would like to look at the whole measure of his life today while getting there. So if you would turn in your Bibles to Hebrews 11, and then also flip over to Genesis chapter 37, and you can put your finger there because we will be in the book of Genesis this morning most of the time. Joseph stands out as one of the most truly heroic people in all of the Bible. Jacob, Joseph's father, who we talked about last time, his life started out as a dishonest, self-absorbed, shallow boy, who then, over the course of his lifetime, as he struggled with people and struggled with God, he was developed into a deep man of faith. Well, Joseph, in contrast to his father, he was a pretty amazing person from the very beginning. I mean, he had tremendous faith, he had enormous courage, he had a godly character, he was wise beyond his years, he had a sensitive heart toward God, and God's hand was on his life in a very profound way. But even with all of that going for him, it didn't mean that he had an easy life. Joseph didn't live in a bubble free from suffering and hardship. He faced some very difficult trials in his life. He found himself hated and forsaken by his family and friends. He was betrayed by those that he loved. He was punished and imprisoned for a crime that he didn't commit. He faced temptations and tests of character that would crush most of us. You see, there is an unstated expectation about life that many people share. That if you are a good person, then you should be exempt from suffering. Bad things shouldn't happen to good people. Joseph was as good of a person as ever walked on this planet, short of Jesus Christ. I mean, he wasn't perfect, but he was who people would consider a very good person. And yet he suffered. His life was filled with a great deal of suffering during an extended period of his life. Now, none of us are exempt from suffering, and suffering is not an indication by itself that God is with you or not, that God is happy with you or not, that God is using you or not. See, bad things, they happen to both bad people and good people. Suffering is not always without good purpose. The person who lives by faith is able to see that, because that person sees their life as part of God's larger story rather than seeing their life as its own individual, isolated existence with its own self-contained meaning and purpose. When we have a small, isolated view of our life like that, it doesn't reach beyond me, then we are constantly being upset by the stuff of life because it isn't going my way all of the time. It isn't fulfilling my purpose all of the time. Joseph, he shows us how to live as a person of faith in the Lord, even through suffering. Well, Joseph was the firstborn son of Jacob's wife, Rachel, the the wife that he loved. Joseph had 10 older brothers born to Jacob's other wife, Leah, who had 6 of those sons, and the handmaids of Leah and Rachel, who each had 2 sons. Joseph's mother, Rachel, had a second child several years after Joseph was born, named Benjamin. Sadly, she died while giving birth to Benjamin. So, one of the first significant difficulties faced by Joseph was the death of his mother when he was a child. That experience was the first of a series of bad things that will happen to Joseph. What effect did that experience have on Joseph? It's impossible for us to know that. But see, tragedy and suffering takes us in one of 2 directions. We can become bitter and resentful about life and grow hard and callous, or we can let the suffering impact us in a positive way, creating the character traits of understanding and humility and compassion and patience. And this is how Joseph responds to the suffering in his life. One of the things that stands out about Joseph is how he never loses his perspective. His view of the eternal always remains intact. He remains hopeful in the middle of some of the most hopeless circumstances. Joseph's life attitude enabled him to live above his circumstances rather than letting his circumstances drag him down into depression and despair. He lived out what Paul encourages us to do in 2 Corinthians 4:16, where Paul writes, "So we do not lose heart. Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal." The main part of Joseph's story begins in Genesis 37. So let's flip over there. Genesis 37, where we find him at the age of 17, living with his father Jacob and 11 brothers in the land of Canaan. And beginning to read in verse 3, it says, "Now Israel," another name for Jacob, "Now Israel," or Jacob, "loved Joseph more than any other of his sons, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him." Jacob had grown up in a family where favoritism had caused a tremendous amount of strife in the family. Jacob's father, Isaac, loved Jacob's brother Esau most, and he didn't refrain from showing that favoritism. And Jacob's mother favored him over his brother Esau. So we would hope that Jacob, of all people, would avoid favoritism with his own children because of his own past. But he repeats the same mistakes that his own father did by showing tremendous favoritism toward Joseph over his other sons. And that favoritism, it creates an environment for deep resentment to grow in the hearts of his other sons toward Joseph. It says, "And he," Jacob, "made him," Joseph, "a robe of many colors." So it wasn't enough that Jacob favored Joseph over his other sons, but he basically puts a billboard on Joseph that says, "This is my favorite son." This special robe set Joseph apart from his brothers as his father's special one, his favorite, his pet. Joseph was given special privileges and the best of everything in the family. It didn't help either that Joseph really was a great kid. He really was a great kid. I mean, he was very conscientious. He was smart. He was gifted. He was talented. He was mature beyond his years. You remember that kid back in grade school who was smarter than everyone else, always followed the rules, always sat in the front row, attentively listening, always had his homework done, always the first one to raise his hand in class, always volunteered to stay in at recess to help the teacher, always doing the extra credit assignments. The teacher loved that kid. That kid was Joseph. It says, but when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him or could not say a kind word to him. Notice the word that's used to describe the brothers' feelings toward Joseph. It says they hated him. That word translated hate from the Hebrew, you know what it means? It means hate. They hated his guts. They probably had bitterness toward their father, too, because of his gross, preferential treatment of Joseph. This is a family that's full of strife and division. Well, in verse 5, it says, now Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf rose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf. His brothers said to him, are you indeed to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers and said, behold, I have dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. But when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you? And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. Well, his brothers, as expected, this just adds fuel to their hatred for him. But his father, he reproves Joseph for what he says, but he also keeps this saying in mind, it says. He ponders what this might mean. See, because Jacob himself has received revelations from God about his own future through dreams. So as uncomfortable as this dream by Joseph made him feel, Jacob, he had to consider the implications of it. That perhaps God really was revealing Joseph's future. He would keep this in mind and watch what the Lord might do. Now, a question that comes to our mind is, why did Joseph share these dreams with his family? I mean, is he bragging or is he just stupid? Well, bragging was not at all consistent with the character of Joseph, so I don't believe that he was bragging to his brothers here. That leaves the other possibility. It appears that at this point in his life, Joseph is a bit naive and gullible. Well, once during those days, Joseph's 10 older brothers had been gone a considerable time shepherding the family's flocks a long distance away. And Jacob, their father, was beginning to worry, so he sent Joseph to check on them and then report back. Well, Joseph finally tracked them down some 50 miles north near an area called Dothan. And we pick up in verse 18. It says, they saw him from afar, the brothers saw Joseph from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams. Skip down to verse 23. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore. You see, that was really grinding on him, wasn't it? That robe. And they took him, they threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat, and looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. Let's not kill him. Let's just make a few bucks off of him." And his brothers listened to him. Then the Ishmaelite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. They took Joseph to Egypt. Skip to verse 31. Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in the blood. And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not." And he identified it and said, "It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his garments and put on sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. Meanwhile, Joseph was sold as a slave to a man named Potiphar in Egypt, who was the captain of the guard for Pharaoh of Egypt. This brings us to Genesis chapter 39. Although Joseph was now a slave in a foreign land with everything that he had known and cared about stripped away from him, he wasn't alone. The Lord was with him, blessing him and giving him success in everything that he did while serving Potiphar as his slave. In fact, it says that the blessing of God was so profoundly evident in Joseph's life that Potiphar could see it, and he placed his entire estate in Joseph's care. And the blessing of God on Joseph spilled over into Potiphar's life and his household. Well, everything was going great at this point in Joseph's life, except for one small issue. Joseph was a very handsome young man, and Potiphar's wife began to take an interest in him, pressuring him constantly to go to bed with her. Joseph, being a person of strong principles and dedication both to God and to his master Potiphar, refused her advances. But one day, while Joseph was in the house with no one else around, Potiphar's wife grabbed him and demanded that he come to bed with her. Joseph pulled himself away, ran out of the house, leaving his cloak behind in the woman's hand. Well, she was insulted and embarrassed by his refusal, so in a fit of rage, she made up a story claiming that Joseph had tried to rape her. When Potiphar's wife told Potiphar what had happened, he was understandably very angry, and he had Joseph thrown into the prison. This brings us to Genesis chapter 40. So now Joseph finds himself in an Egyptian prison. Well, this is nothing like the dreams that he had had about his future, where he saw his family bowing down to him. I mean, so what's going on? Had he just made all of that stuff up in his head? See, even though Joseph's life isn't playing out the way that he had thought, his faith in God carries him through this new setback. Because while in prison, attending to the needs of two very special prisoners, the royal baker and the royal cupbearer, Joseph, with the help of the Lord, was able to correctly explain the meaning of unusual dreams that each of these two men had. According to Joseph's interpretations, the cupbearer's dream predicted that he would get his job back, serving Pharaoh again in his court. The baker's dream predicted that he would be executed. Well, both predictions came true within days. Joseph asked the cupbearer to plead with Pharaoh for his release from prison when he got back into Pharaoh's court. And the cupbearer said, oh yeah, I'll definitely do that for you. And then he forgot. Genesis 41. Joseph spent 2 more years in prison. He was 17 years old when his brothers had sold him as a slave. He's now 30. He spent the last 13 years of his life as a slave and then as a prisoner. How could any of that have anything to do with the plan of God for his life? Well, believe it or not, it did. Joseph was right where God wanted him. About that time, the Pharaoh of Egypt had 2 very disturbing dreams. And he knew these dreams meant something, but none of his wise men could explain the meaning of the dreams to him. Well, that jarred the memory of the royal cupbearer who was listening in on the conversations. And he remembered how there was that guy back in prison who had correctly interpreted his own dream and the baker's dream. So the cupbearer told Pharaoh about Joseph. And Joseph was immediately brought from prison to the palace. Pharaoh told Joseph the dreams he had, and with the help of God, Joseph explained the meaning of the dreams to Pharaoh. The dreams predicted that there would be 7 plentiful years of harvest, which would then be immediately followed by 7 years of severe drought and famine. And then Joseph gave Pharaoh a plan for how to survive this terrible famine that was coming. He recommended that the Pharaoh appoint someone to collect as much surplus as possible during those 7 years of plenty and abundance and store it away for the 7 years of famine. Genesis 41, verse 37, it says, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. So Joseph goes from being a prisoner to the second most powerful person in Egypt, in charge of everything except Pharaoh himself. And through his wise, God-directed leadership, Joseph saved Egypt from starvation. Well, the famine had not only hit Egypt, but the surrounding region too, including Canaan. Hearing that grain could be purchased in Egypt is what then led Joseph's brothers to travel from Canaan to Egypt, which then led to the reuniting of Joseph with his estranged family after 22 years. Because of Pharaoh's deep appreciation for what Joseph had done for the people of Egypt, Pharaoh invited all of Joseph's family to come and live in Egypt. And so they did. Joseph's father Jacob, his 11 brothers, their wives and children, all moved lock, stock, and barrel down to Egypt. And this is where the people of Jacob, also known as Israel, will stay for the next 400 years. Until God will raise up a man named Moses, who will then lead them back to their land of Canaan. This brings us to Genesis chapter 50. Seventeen years after the family had moved to Egypt, Joseph's father Jacob died. And immediately following the death of Joseph's father, his older brothers, who had conspired together and sold him into slavery some 40 years earlier, they feared that their day of reckoning for what they had done to Joseph had finally come. Now that their father was dead, Joseph would be free to have his vengeance on his brothers. So verse 15 of Genesis 50 says, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you. And now, please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. See, the brothers, they make up this story about their father's dying wish, hoping to protect themselves from Joseph's vengeance. And it breaks Joseph's heart to see them act this way, and he weeps. They're treating him like a stranger rather than a brother. He loves them. He's forgiven them years ago. He has no ill will toward them. He's shown no ill will toward them. He's done nothing but good for these guys. This whole time they've been in Egypt. Verse 18. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not fear. For am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear. I will provide for you and your little ones. Thus he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph, he reassures his brothers and he tries to get them to see the events of their lives from a different perspective. He says, you meant evil against me. They indeed did a very bad thing to Joseph, selling him into slavery. I mean, that was evil. But God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. God brought good out of the awful thing that Joseph's brothers had done. God used Joseph as his human instrument for saving countless lives from that terrible famine that had come. And God used all of the stuff that had happened as a means for moving Jacob's family down to Egypt, where they would be able to grow and to thrive until the time was right for them to return to the land that God had promised to give them and take possession of it as their own country. They will literally be a nation inside of the nation of Egypt, and they will move into Canaan and take possession of what God had promised to give them. See, Joseph, he realized that he and his brothers were all part of a larger story of God playing out in history. And he wants his brothers to see that too. It's Joseph seeing his life as part of God's bigger story that enabled him to forgive his brothers and to move past all that awful stuff that had happened. The word the Bible uses for this perspective that Joseph has is faith. Hebrews 11:1. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Verse 22, it says, so Joseph remained in Egypt, he and his father's house. Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation, the children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were counted as Joseph's own. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. When Moses leads the people out of Egypt some 400 years later, one of the things that they will do is they will pack up the bones of Joseph and take them with them. Hebrews 11:22. By faith, Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. In closing, our lives are part of a bigger story, God's story. And we need to see our lives like that. Our life is more than just me. And the contrast between Joseph and his brothers illustrates this. Joseph's brothers, they lived their lives largely for themselves. They were small-minded people. And the fruit of the way they lived their lives was guilt and fear and resentment and pettiness. Joseph, in contrast, he lived his life selflessly by faith in God, seeing his life as part of God's bigger purpose. And the fruit of his life being lived like that was forgiveness and freedom and love and generosity and courage and joy. And he could look back over his life when it was done and see that God had used him to make a difference. What about you and me? How do you see your life? Is it all about me? Or do you see your life as part of God's bigger story? See, living for me is a faithless existence, and there's no future in it. Living for God's purposes and His promises is a life of faith, and one that's filled with meaning and purpose, even in our suffering. Joseph said to his brothers, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. God is at work. By faith, see your life as part of God's bigger work in this world. Let's bow our heads. Father, we thank you for Joseph's life and this powerful example that he lives out for us of what a life of faith looks like. During difficulty, hardship, suffering, loss, betrayal, and also as someone who ended up very successful. That through all of that, his heart was knit to you, God. His eyes stayed steadfast upon you, your promises and your story, your purpose, what you were all about in this world and in our time and space. God, I pray for each of us that we would have hearts like Joseph. We'd be people of faith. Make that so on us, Lord. In Jesus' name.